Okay, so welcome to the lecture about model-based testing with events and non-determinism. What we want to look at in this session is to deal with a class of systems which become more and more common today, systems which actually expose non-determinism. If you think about programming the cloud, then that's really all over the place happening there, because it's all about distributed systems in which you cannot predict in which order certain things happen. When we did the protocol testing, in which we talked about in one of those lectures, that was also something we were all the time confronted with, because protocols are quite similar, like programming the cloud. So you have a network. On the network, there is a certain latency in which messages are exchanged. You don't know in which order they will be received. And you have problems like racing conditions and so on. And let's just recall how we defined asynchronicity. That was a slide in the session about finite state machines. A synchronous system was characterized by the fact that each response immediately follows the associated stimulus. The difference, like we discussed in that session, of an asynchronous system to this is that this is basically not longer holding. So we can have responses which come actually in different order than the according stimuli were sent. This is one thing which can happen. For example, one message can be faster than another message on a different network path. We may also have responses which just happen spontaneously without any associated request. No? For example, a heartbeat from a server is a typical message which comes from the server asking the client, are you still alive? And it comes without according request from the client. So the presence of and the ordering of this kind of events or responses of the system under test is just not predictable at model design time. And that's what we want to talk about here and now. The example I will use through this session is a chat server, a little chat room server. And what happens here, so we have the server which implements a very basic chat room functionality, and we have a couple of users which are logged onto that server. And you all know this kind of application. That's one reason why we have chosen it here. So what you can do, you can enter the session, you become part of the chat room, you can exit the session, you can list all the users which are in the session currently, and you can send or broadcast a message to all other users which are currently logged on. And the last thing is an interesting part here. If you broadcast this message, if you send the message to the chat room, it should appear on the screen of all other users, including your own screen. But in which order it appears there is not completely determined. So that's the entire problem we want to tackle over this entire 1.5 hour. The requirements of the system are rather straightforward. We will not actually model them in order to shortcut the thing a little bit, but to understanding what's going on, it makes anyway sense to talk about them. So requirement number one is pretty straightforward. If I log on, then there is an according message which comes back from the server that the log on was successful. And provided we're ignoring things like, you know, authentication or something like this, we are saying that every log on request must receive an according response. And similar, every log off request must receive an according log off response. And similar for the list of all the users which are in the chat room, we expect that for such a request, an according response comes back. So that's pretty straightforward. Now, the next one is more about functionality. If a list response is sent to the server, then we expect that actually all the users which are currently logged onto the session are returned by the list response. And the last ones are the real interesting one. The number one, in, R5, is about if someone broadcasts a message to the chat room server, then actually all the logged in users must actually receive this message. R6 is now some kind of determinism which is actually put on the order in which the messages are received. If you look at one given sender, then the messages this sender sends must be received in the same order in which he has sent it. So if one user says hi and then bye, it would be wrong if on the other screen of another user bye and hi would be displayed. So there is some local order consistency here which must be satisfied. And if you look here at some examples to understand this better, and it's this trace game which we played before. Assume we have two users which are logged on into the chat room, and we have this trace number one, and the user number one sends a message one. I've just used this numbers here for messages to make the association to the user clear, and the user number two has sent the message number two. Now, the broadcast acknowledged, that's basically what it means, the thing is now displayed at the user screen, can happen, for example, in the given order, or that's at least what I claim, you should probably check yourself. User number two receives one, user number one receives two, user number one receives one, and user number two receives two. So that seems to be a correct trace, right? Now let's look at another one. Again, the same has happened. So two different users have each of them have broadcasted send one message. And same prefix, like in trace number one. But the order is a little bit different in which the requests are actually processed. Do you see a problem with that?
Nope.
No. So that seems to be okay. And here's a further one, again, the same prefix, the same message broadcasting, and again a different order. And I shortcut it for you, it's again, no problem. Because, in fact, in this particular scenario we are looking at, if just one user sends a message and another user sends another message, then any order is correct. As long as all the messages which have been actually sent are eventually delivered to the screens of the users. So this is clear. Now let's look at another example. In this example, we have just one user, and the user, there are two users logged in, but just one user sends a message. And he first sends one A, and then he sends one B. And now let's look at this order. So user number two receives one A. User number one receives one A. That's the sender itself. User number one receives one B, and user number two receives one B. So in order to understand whether our requirement is satisfied, we should probably just look at a given user, forgetting about the other one. Let's take user number two, he first receives one A, and then later he receives one B. So that seems to be okay, right? If you look at the other trace, we have again the same prefix. Now let's see what happens here. User number one, one A. User number one, one B, that's okay. But then user number two first receives one B, and then he receives one A, and that's obviously wrong. For this particular transfer to the messages to user number one, there is an inconsistency regarding to the requirement that messages coming from one user must arrive in the order they have been sent. So, if you look at slices of the model which we will create for this in a moment, that's also quite visible. This is basically the slicing of a scenario out of the entire model, which represents the two cases of traces we have just looked at a minute before. So we have some log-ons and so on, and then this is the first case where one user sends one message and another user sends a message. And you see, basically, if you look at the state S10, you see already what's happening, because from the state S10, all of those things are possible. All four possibilities are enabled, namely that first user number two receives two, or then number one receives one, number two receives one, number one receives two. And so there is no ordering constraint. And the full diamond of this that we call this typically a diamond. This is very common for non-deterministic systems, where you start with some branching, it goes like this, and finally you end up in some final state where everything has been processed, what you expect. So the full diamond doesn't fit on the slide, you will see this later. But what it basically does is trying out all the possibilities of orderings. And just to recall, we have talked about this before, but now we see it really live in a useful context. The diamond in the state diagram tells us that at this point, the system we are testing has possible choices what it can do. Now, if we look at a round state in the diagram, it really means the system under test has to do all the things which go out of the round states. These are things which we input to the system, stimuli, and each of those stimuli must be possible. And if you look at the diamond, it just reverses, no? So it's not longer all of them have to be possible, just one of them, or exactly one of them, is the potential answer of the system. This is the slice where the local consistency, order consistency does matter. That's now the example, the other example we had, no? One user sends 1A and another sends, same user sends 1B. And now if you look here at a state S10, then we see from the ordering constraint, there are only two possibilities, no? Because whatever happens, first message 1A must be delivered because it was sent first from this one user. So basically it's still a diamond, so there is still some, you know, some non-determinism in the order in which things happen. So it doesn't matter whether 1A is first received by user number 2 or by user number 1. However, the other consistency must be satisfied that it's really 1A and not 1B which is first received by any of those users in the system. Okay, let's try to understand a little bit better before we go very concrete and model this problem, what test conformance means in the presence of events. And the notion of conformance is what we use basically in model-based testing to describe under which circumstances a model which says something what a system under test must do is related to the implementation. Or with other words, conformance means under which circumstances the implementation conforms to what you have modeled. So that's called conformance. And that's a basic notion of correctness of model-based testing. So implementation is conformant to the model, then it means it passes the tests. And there is a notion in the literature, which is not really so important to know the literature now, but I think it's a useful notion anyway to understand this. And this notion is called alternating simulation. And I will want to show you that here by simulating this basically on the slides. The idea is basically the following. Suppose we start here with our chat room server, and the model has a round state in which it says broadcast 1,1. Okay, so that's now, if you look at it from a game viewpoint, a move that the model does. No? So the alternating simulation, by the way, if you find this interesting, has a lot to do with game theory and mathematics. So it's a stimuli which the tester do or the model does is something which the system under test must be able to follow. So we make a move, the system under test must follow our move. So the conformance means, okay, the system under test must do this step. No? But in fact, a real system under test may be able to do many different other things which we don't know about or which we haven't modeled. So that's what this great part here should indicate, that there can be other possibilities, but we are not asking the system under test for other possibilities. Now, let's go on. The next thing the model says again, broadcast. No? Again, it's our move, no? If you think of a two-player game. So the system under test must be able to do the same move. And again, there could be many other things which it could have been able to do. Now the things turn around, and it's completely symmetric. That's a nice thing about it. Now we have a response or an event, and the system under test says broadcast acknowledge. Now it's his move, so to say. Not longer our move, his move. Now what happens is that the model now, in order to make the implementation conformant, must allow this move or must be able to simulate this move. So the model at this place must have this step here, which the system under test just did. But again, it's symmetric because there may be also other possibilities which the model would have allowed. No? So remember, we have seen before on the diagram these diamonds, no? And there were many other possibilities which would be allowed. But the system under test made the choice to make this particular move. It's correct if the model can simulate or make the same move. No? And again, there is the next move which the system under test does, and the same repeats. Now, the model must be able to do the same move, and there are potentially other possibilities. No? So you see the symmetry here. It's really like our move, their move. No? If it's our move, then the other guy must be able to do the move. If it's their move, then we must be able to do the move. No? And if this is satisfied, then we have verified basically conformance. So that's the idea of the basic core idea of testing with Spec Explorer is actually about this this kind of correctness notion. Okay. One thing which is important if you look at modeling and testing non-deterministic systems with these events is when can you actually do the slicing, which we talked about in the session about abstract state machines. And there is a difference here. The difference is basically, well, if you think about this game viewpoint, no? Our move, their move. No? If you do slicing, what we actually do is we erase some of the moves. So we can make liberately the choice to erase one of our possible moves and don't test this move. That's exactly what we are doing when we do slicing. No? Instead of doing all potential things, we have a test purpose. We say we only want to do that particular thing. However, we should not slice away the move of the system under test out of our model, the allowed move, because this can lead to an incorrect test model. Now, if we go back here, if we would like, okay, we could have had a move here, no, which we have erased, so that's fine. But now suppose we would have here, where we actually have a diamond state, which is not on the picture here, but you know that there is one because these are responses here of the system under test. Suppose we would have removed this move and only left this one here. Then we would get conformance error at test runtime because the system under test did something different than we removed, and that's really not what we want to do. No. So slicing is basically about removing the decision points we as testers have or as modelers have when we go from the model to the model-based test suite. But it is not about removing the decisions which the system under test has. I mean, you can do that if you know that under certain circumstances you can predict that the system under test doesn't do anything else than what you leave over in your slice, but a good practice is to not slice it. So to answer what I said here in terms of court, no? So if you look at a scenario like this one, no? So broadcast acknowledge, that's not good, no? Because now we in the scenario we basically encoded kind of, you can also look at it like this, a test oracle. So we encoded what the potential response of the system under test is, but the model, the actual C-sharp model program will allow more answers. So, so again, what I said already, no? So we can slice stimuli, that's part of the test selection process. We can't slice responses because it's part of the test oracle and we don't want to restrict the test oracle. Okay. Nico talked about this a little bit already in the session about abstract state machine modeling. I just want to recall that because accepting state stuff is particularly important if you look at non-deterministic systems, and we will see why. So I think the general idea of an accepting state should be clear. No? So if we look at this word here, or this fragment of a word, micro, no? So it's not a valid word. No? So something is missing. No? So that's the idea of accepting states comes actually from recognition of language. No? So before the word is not ended, we should not consider it as a valid word. No? And if we transfer this to our example, let's look at this test case. Broadcast, broadcast, and then we are done. So we stop here. No? So that's kind of doesn't make any sense because there is no test oracle. We haven't received any events. No? So we should not stop here because the entire purpose of the test suite is to actually verify whether the events come in, which I expected after I broadcasted a message on the chat server. And you see that's even very important for non-deterministic systems because the responses which belong to the recording requests we send to the system may come much later. If we have just call and return thing like we have in the ad service example, that may be not such a deep problem. It's still a problem there because we have the call and immediately the return and we verify the return, but here is no return. The actual return, in this case, is a couple of steps later. So I think we talked already about what an accepting state basically is. So it characterizes those states in which a trace can end. And I think, Nico, you had also a state predicate for describing an accepting state, no?
Yes.
So we have seen this before. We don't need to go too much into that. A way how we could define accepting state for our chat example, and that's typical for this kind of problem. It could be that we say, okay, we reach an accepting state if all messages which have been sent out, if all requests which have been sent out had matching responses. That's like an idle state of the system. No? So every single request that was finally responded, then we have an accepting state. So, the largest part of this session I will actually be in Visual Studio and develop with you together the model here. And that's what we will start here in a minute. So just give you some overview what we want to do, why we do that. We will also, I think we haven't seen this before, but we will also introduce with this example object-oriented modeling because the way how this problem is defined, it's quite natural to use actually internally in the model objects to describe the state of that model. And we will show how to use helper methods for dealing with modeling and indeed the modeling with events and testing with events which we have conceptually seen before. Okay. Let's now go into the demo. Okay, so I have prepared a little bit of this, and most of the stuff we will do here. What I have done basically is develop the state of this model, and we will walk over that, and then we have to fill in the actions. So the state is based on, first of all, an enumeration variable which describes in which state one given user in the chatroom server currently is from the viewpoint of the chatroom server. So we remember a user can log in, he can log off, he can list. So that's the basic states. And so we just distinguish when a user has logged in, whether he's currently waiting for the request, for the response to that login. And once he is logged on, we have this particular state that he is now logged on. Another thing similar is we have a variable to represent that the user has requested to list the content of the server, so we represent this waiting for list. And similar with log off, waiting for log off. So that's straightforward. However,
question, Wolfgang?
Yeah, go ahead.
Why would there be a user state waiting for own message? Right, seeing as a user must receive a copy of their own message, if they had sent one, possible state would be waiting for that return, wouldn't it?
Because it can be actually asynchronous, the system. So what I haven't showed you, there is some kind of asynchronicity. For example, oh, thank you. I should repeat the question. So the question is, why do we actually need to represent the states here, waiting for log on, waiting for list? Because supposedly we can immediately return from the log on.
Actually,
there's no need to wait for it.
Actually, the question is more, I think that's an interesting question, but the question was more, why do a single user need to wait for a message that they send themselves?
No, I'm asking, why is that not a fifth state
right.
of the user?
Yeah.
It would seem like you need a fifth state
yeah.
that says the user is waiting for their own message.
Right.
Because, actually, it's by design. So I have to repeat the question again. So why isn't there a state so that a user, all users are waiting for receiving one of these broadcasted messages which are sent to the chat server, no? And the reason is because this can actually happen at any point of time. So a user can even send a message to the server, and for some reason it takes forever until this message is delivered at the other user. In the meantime, the other user does already a list request and does something else. And so that's why we do not need to represent this particular state waiting for broadcast acknowledge, because it basically can happen at any time when you are logged on.
But do I not need a state where I'm waiting for my own message? Because that's one thing I know must be coming.
You could do that, but actually it's much easier to treat yourself the same like all the other users from the modeling perspective. Because it's not only yourself which is waiting for its own message, all the other people are also waiting for receiving that message. No? And so this is very symmetric in the end. But this is different to the situation where you are requesting a lock-on which is only just for you and not for the other people. And that's why that is distinguished. Okay. Okay, we have this kind of enumeration of user states, but we need to represent more on a per user base. And for that, we introduce a class which contains the state of each user which is currently logged on in the system. No? So that's the object-oriented aspect here. And for every user, we have indeed represented his current state according to this enumeration variable. And the other thing, and this is now something which you have to get a little bit used to. It's cannot invent this normally from scratch. But the idea here is, how do we model that? So if someone delivers sends a message to the chat server, we will actually build like an inbox of all the messages which supposedly should be received by other users. So every user has attached with himself like a mailbox, if you want to say like that. We call that here waiting for delivery of those messages which have been sent by other users to these users and which still need to be acknowledged by a broadcast acknowledge or still need to be displayed on the screen of that users. And so we will see when we develop the model how that nicely works. No? But at this point, we can just say the invariant. So the invariant of this data state is that whenever a user has a message which is to be delivered to him, no, which has been sent but has not yet been delivered, it will be in this list. So sequence container is our list type here in the modeling world. And it will not be only the message, but we also know the identifier of the user who has sent that message. So that's this waiting for delivery variable. Yeah?
You marked it as internal. Does that do anything to the model, or is
there? It's internal because I'm intending to use it outside of the class here, inside of this model. So it cannot be private, no? But it doesn't really make a difference. Again, I forgot to ask the question, to repeat the question. I'm sorry. So the question was, why do we mark these fields as internal? My answer was, does that have any special meaning in context of modeling? The answer is, it does not have any special meaning. It's just for C#, for the visibility rules of C#. It could be also public, no? But I don't need to have it public at this point. I just need to be able to access these fields from my rule methods in the model.